This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. And this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, January 24th, 2019. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's about 6 minutes after noon. Ahead this hour, Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek brings us an update on what's burning under Bella Vista and what, if anything, will happen next with a stump dump fire. And in our second half hour, Liz Calloway, the one person in the one-person show Every Brilliant Thing, discusses the show and what it is like to hear her voice come out of an animated character in an Oscar-nominated movie. We'll have highlights from our conversation that took place at the Fayetteville Public Library earlier this week. And then later today on NPR's Here and Now, Florida's new Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, has been in office for less than a month, and he's taking some surprising steps, reversing course from Governor Rick Scott on climate change. A conversation with the governor about his agenda, plus the afternoon's news on Here and Now, right after today's Ozarks at Large. The annual kickoff for the Cocktails for a Cause in Eureka Springs arrives this evening. The Basin Park Ballroom will feature 11 nonprofits that will, over the course of 2019, benefit from Cocktail for a Cause events. The kickoff in the Basin Park Ballroom from 5 to 7 tonight, and you can find out more at the Facebook page for Cocktails for a Cause. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should tell you, KUAF has been designated as one of the nonprofits selected for inclusion in the program again this year. This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas court system is looking for Marshallese interpreters after the state's only interpreter decided to step down from that role after 13 years. There are about 12,000 Marshallese living in Northwest Arkansas, and Mara Simmons, the director of the Arkansas Administrative Office of Courts Interpreter Services, says it's the second most requested interpreter language in the state.
We have to interpret exactly what the witness has said, or the attorney, or the judge, without adding, deleting, paraphrasing, or changing any of the meaning of it.
Simmons says there will be an orientation session tomorrow and Saturday for anyone interested in the job.
So it's almost like we're an echo, but we can change it from one language to the other.
Simmons says Friday's session at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale will consist of going over the role and ethics of an interpreter. And on Saturday, they'll move on to an English assessment exam.
It tests synonyms, antonyms, idiomatic expressions, sentence completion. It tests some of the ethical things that we have reviewed the day before, and basically general vocabulary.
From there, Simmons says, participants will move on to the Marshallese portion of the assessment.
It's a recorded test. You have 10 questions, and each of those questions is read to the candidate, and then the candidate basically gives you an interpretation of it in their language.
Simmons says qualified participants will then begin one-on-one training that includes learning legal terms and their suggested interpretations, as well as the three modes of interpretation referred to as consecutive, simultaneous, and side translation.
Consecutive means that whoever's asking the question or whoever's speaking at the time, the interpreter waits until the entire question is asked and then interprets it into the target language. In this case, let's say it was Marshallese. Then when the answer is provided in Marshallese, the interpreter waits until that answer is complete and then interprets it into English for the court.
Simmons says consecutive interpretation requires training in memorization and note-taking, as the interpreter needs to keep track of entire statements. Simultaneous translation takes place when the interpreter translates a speaker's words as they're speaking.
Simultaneously means that we have to catch every word that is being said, transferred in our brains in order to make sense to the person that we're going to be interpreting to. And that usually is about 140 words a minute.
And lastly, an interpreter uses side translation if the parties involved in the case need to translate a document. Simmons says interpreting is a full-time contract job, and testing, training, and certification can take anywhere from 6 months to a year. Registered interpreters make $40 an hour, while certified interpreters make $50. And Simmons adds interpreters play a crucial role in the judicial system, as due process can't be carried out without them.
But without interpreters, if you have someone who doesn't speak English or sign language, it's like not having a participation of the person who is supposed to be in trial or in the hearing.
Even when there is a Marshallese interpreter working in Arkansas, Simmons says they still rely on phone or video conferencing, and in some instances will fly interpreters in from other states because demand is so high. Interested candidates can find more information about required paperwork and registration fees on the Arkansas Administrative Office of Courts Interpreter Services website. A new report from an engineering firm hired by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality says the cost of putting out an underground fire at an illegal dump site in Bella Vista could be 3 to 5 times higher than the amount of funding available from the state. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek gives us this update.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality has about $8 million in a fund that could be used to squash and remediate the burning stump dump along Trafalgar Road in Bella Vista. But new estimates from NSAFE, a Memphis firm brought in to draft an action plan for the site, put the cost of that kind of undertaking at $21 to $37 million.
I really didn't know what to expect. We knew it was going to be expensive.
That's Bella Vista Mayor Peter Christie. He says he met with Governor Asa Hutchinson last week.
And I must confess, there was a moment of silence as I absorbed it. But then it began to make sense. It's a very large tract of land. We don't know what's down there. We know that they have brought in some experts who have been looking at it, and I can only assume that they know exactly what they're doing and what needs to be done.
According to NSAFE's report, the low areas and ravines at the Trafalgar site had been used as an unpermitted dumping ground for about 15 years, starting in 2001. Comparisons of topographic maps from 1970 and 2017 indicate the landfill is 7 to 8 acres in size and could contain 115 to 175,000 cubic yards of waste. That waste includes construction debris, as well as unknown quantities of petroleum products, batteries, and other materials that could contain hazardous substances. Mayor Christie says at this point, the city is there to assist when it can, but the ADEQ is in charge.
Our involvement is, they will come and ask us, can you help us do this, whatever that might be? And if it's within our power to be able to do it, then we will say, yes, we will help as much as we can. Don't know what that could be at this point.
NSAFE's draft lays out 7 alternatives that could be used to deal with the stump dump, along with their associated costs and risks. The options range from fire and smoke management to complete excavation. Christie says at this point, those are all on the table.
This is a brand new experience for us. So you have to rely on the experts who have gone through this before with other burns underground. And what they've basically said is, you know, patience, because this takes time and you want to make sure that you do it right.
Prep work at the stump dump started last week with the construction of a 15-foot fire break. The site will also require an access road and an exploratory trench. All of that is expected to cost around $1 million. A water supply line to the site was installed earlier this month. All the alternatives for putting out the fire also require plans for fire and smoke control and debris and hazardous substances management, as well as air and water monitoring programs. Christie says it will be up to the ADEQ to decide which option will be both appropriate and feasible.
I think they're still debating which is the best avenue to pursue. I imagine they are looking for less expensive because the governor told me the next step is we have to go to the EPA for additional funding. And of course, the EPA, unfortunately, is closed at the moment.
In a statement, the governor called the estimates for the stump dump cleanup stunning and directed the ADEQ and NSAFE to explore more cost-effective alternatives. Christie says he's hopeful the ADEQ will move quickly to settle on a solution.
I'm expecting that in the not-too-distant future, ADEQ will actually come back to us and say, okay, here's the plan and lay it all out for us. Let's get a time frame. What are your expectations of us? Are there expectations of the county? Because right now, most of us are just sitting on the sidelines and waiting to see what's going to happen.
And as they wait, Some residents have raised questions about who is ultimately responsible for the situation along Trafalgar Road. The Bella Vista Property Owners Association leased and operated the stump dump from 2003 until the end of 2016, when the site was closed and capped with soil. POA CEO Tom Judson has said the property wasn't always monitored, but staff would remove trash if they saw it. Brown's Tree Care purchased the land in January 2018. The fire department was called to the site in July after reports of smoke, and firefighters noted evidence of burning on the property. NSAFE's report also states part of the landfill stretches beneath a parking lot owned by Blue Mountain Storage. And according to the ADEQ, no one ever had any permits to use Trafalgar Road as a dumping site, although records show the ADEQ had been to the property in 2008. Following a complaint from a resident who noticed several concrete drums had been left in a ravine. Christie says, as a taxpayer himself, he understands where residents are coming from. But for now, the fire is the priority.
I really don't know how long this will take, who's involved. I must confess that our focus right now is to get the fire out. And if the bad stuff, whatever it is, has to be extracted, let's get it out there so that we're back to some sort of good state for the land. And then we can talk about other things.
According to a preliminary schedule that will depend on the chosen solution and the actual state of the property once experts begin their work, it could take more than a year and a half to clean up the stump dump. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
The ADEQ is launching a community information page specifically to update their work at the stump dump. It includes a copy of the draft report from NSAFE that outlines all the possible options for cleaning up the site. Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge near Eureka Springs is collaborating with other big cat sanctuaries and even a zoo to end exotic animal breeding for profit. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich visits the sanctuary in winter to bring us this story.
Most of Turpentine Creek's magnificent animals are hunkered down in their spacious straw-filled enclosures this frigid winter morning. Dahlia Badamo, animal care intern, says winter's a wonderful time to visit the sanctuary, pointing to a few big cats lounging in the cold sun, catching some rays.
The tigers have a winter coat so they can stay warm, and they like to sunbathe. And, you know, they'll always be napping during the day because tigers can sleep. Like up to 20 hours in a day.
Badamo guides hourly walking tours along a securely fenced, mulched pathway through an array of constructed habitats, which feature comfy shelters, perches, and play toys called enrichment. She stops and chirps to a female white tiger named Rockland, laying up against the fence, clearly seeking attention.
So she was 4 months old when we rescued her. She and her two siblings, her brother and her sister, have had metabolic bone disease. So they were really weak and they were unable to walk at that time. But now they've gotten some really good vet care and nutrition, and they're perfectly mobile and everything like that. They can run around and play. So these guys, definitely, you could probably see them playing around in the wintertime, just as much in the summertime.
Right on cue, Rockland rolls around in the snowy grass, vocalizing a little. 30 staff operate this refuge, along with a succession of interns, and everyone is on call to educate the public.
We do everything. We do animal care, we feed them, we prepare their diets, we maintain their habitats, we help build habitats for future animals. So I really loved how many opportunities to do a wide variety of things.
Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge, a USDA animal care licensed facility and a sanctioned Global Federation animal sanctuary, is open every day of the year except Christmas.
We have 50 tigers, lions, leopards, cougars. We have African servals, bear. We have 12 bear right now.
Refuge president and co-founder Tanya Smith, tall, blonde, and shaggy, is perfectly suited to her lifelong vocation, a family venture. They inhabit the compound with the animals. This morning, she takes a break from helping the refuge veterinarian tend to a sick white tiger among six hybrid tigers rescued just before the winter storm struck. The Oklahoma operation was called Ringling Animal Care Center, which sounds legit.
It was basically just a private person with animals in their yard. The guy was evicted from his property and ended up calling us as a last resort to come and take his tigers. And so, you know, this is just something that we have to deal with whenever we go after animals that are in all, you know, we've rescued from 18 states now, so all over the nation.
Neglected, abused, and sick animals, mainly from exotic breeders and private baby animal petting zoos.
There's a lot of really bad actors out there that, you know, I heard horror stories on this last rescue of animals just being mistreated. When they get to 16 weeks of age, people just killing them because they were a liability at that point. They couldn't make them any more money. And, you know, that just is heartbreaking.
USDA Animal Care administers the National Animal Welfare Act. The law sets standards for humane care and treatment for animals on exhibition or sold as exotic pets. Smith encourages the public to help by not patronizing private exhibition places as well as baby animal petting zoos in particular.
You know, they're really cute when they're little, but they are going to grow up. They're going to be a big animal that's going to eat a lot of meat or require specialized vet care and 24 hours a day attention. So think before you get your picture made with a baby tiger or a little baby bear.
Turpentine Creek is able to accommodate up to 130 large rescued animals, with 90 currently housed at the refuge. They also have white tigers from the Henry Dorley Zoo in Omaha, Nebraska, which is culling its collection of hybridized cats.
The white tiger, it's not a pure species of animal. You know, we try to collaborate as much as we can with sanctuaries and zoos. We want to pull them together and not be so segregated and separated. So when they decided they wanted to get rid of Payson, a white tiger there, she was not serving her purpose because she is a white tiger and they're part of the species survival plan, so they wanted to take her off. And they're not going to have white tigers at the Henry Dorley Zoo anymore. So this is how that we help, by bringing her to the refuge, providing her a lifetime home. And they do pay her sponsorship fee of $2,500 a year. And that really, really helps because that pays her basic needs.
As word spreads about hybrid large cat breeding, Turpentine Creek has cultivated relations with several international organizations.
You know, our main focus is the animals that are in our own United States. There's plenty of them there. Now, if we're called, which we have been called on from Argentina, they've banned the circuses in Argentina, so there's a collection of big cats there that they might need help placing, and if we have space available or we have habitats that we can build and then have the resources to take care of those animals, then we're happy to help with any tiger or big cat that we can.
Since startup, Turpentine Creek has built a patchwork of secure, massive wild animal habitats on its acreage, including most recently one to accommodate six bears.
We're blessed now because of donors that we've been able to build everyone a large enclosure so they can get out and play and run. And on this 459 acres, we're utilizing about 120 acres right now. So we have room to expand. You know, we're also working with other sanctuaries across the country, and we've identified through an organization that Turpentine Creek helped develop. It's called Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance. And so at least we can be able to refer animals when we can't take them here. So we feel like it's very important that we hold a united front now that we found that it's not their last resort if we can't take them to this facility, that we can work with other facilities and be able to save that animal.
Tanya Smith says she's grateful to visitors who patronize this sanctuary in winter.
I was out taking some photographs with my husband when we got the big snowstorm, and we got some beautiful pictures. And I encourage you guys to go to our Facebook or online on our website and actually look at those photographs and of the animals loving the big cats. We even got some great shots of the new tigers that we just brought in, so make sure you check that out.
In 2016, Turpentine Creek staged the largest exotic animal rescue in U.S. history, taking in 34 animals from a wild tiger breeding cub petting facility in Colorado, rehoming 14, which were rescued at partner sanctuaries. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge winter hours are 9 to 5, with walking tours available from 10 to 3. You can follow Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge at their Facebook page.
91.3 is supported by the Scott Family Amazium, inviting families across the Ozarks to make every day amazing. Open Wednesday through Monday, the Amazium ignites curiosity in children of all ages through interactive experiences in science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Located at 1009 Museum Way in Bentonville. Information at amazium.org. Additional support provided by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering a variety of living options from apartments to village homes, plus a daily calendar of activities and events. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org.
Liz Callaway is on stage for the entirety of Every Brilliant Thing, the current Theater Squared production at Nadine Baum Studios. It's a one-person show, and she's the one person. She's a Tony-nominated and Emmy-winning actor who made her Broadway debut in Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along. Tuesday night, Liz Callaway, along with Bob Ford, the artistic director of Theater Squared, join me for a public conversation at the Fayetteville Public Library. We're about to hear highlights of our discussion about the play, written by Duncan McMillan and Johnny Donahoe, Liz working with her husband, Dan Foster, who directs this production, and about Liz Callaway's first visit to Northwest Arkansas for the November 2017 T2 Gala.
Boy, I really like this place, and I was thinking maybe someday Dan will direct something here, and then I can tag along and just come back to Fayetteville. And then you sent me an email about, hey, we're doing this one-person play that involves improv and all this audience interaction. And you said that you all thought, oh, you could do it.
When we read the play and decided that we wanted to do it, we knew that we couldn't do this play without actually, we couldn't program it in our season before knowing who we would have to play this role, which is so important. And it was pretty instant. Martin Miller, our executive director, claims to have thought of it first. He said, what about Liz Callaway? And that's when we sent you the script.
And I read it, and I just remember thinking, oh, wow, this is amazing. This would be a huge challenge, but it felt right. And I was able to, I had to rearrange my schedule somewhat. It's very unusual. I don't think I've ever been out of town in one place for this long, ever. And it's not even that long, it's like 6 weeks. And then I said I'd love to do it, I'd love Dan to direct it, just because I started learning it this summer. And mm-hmm. we would rehearse it in our son's playroom and use his stuffed animals around, like in the round, and my cat, Lenny. I'd like, Lenny, you're going to be the vet today. And I put him in the middle, and he would run out of the room. But so, because it was very hard to know how to learn this in advance. But I at least learned the script before I came. It's been really interesting. I don't know if I would have, it was a perfect time for me to do this, also a perfect place to do it. Great theater, a great vibe. And I feel like I've spent my whole career, maybe everything I've done, and I've been doing a lot of concerts the last several years, it's maybe prepared me to do this part.
Concerts have.
Yeah. Oh, and cabaret and being able to, when I first started doing theater and even branching out and doing concerts, I was so shy. And when you're on stage on a Broadway show, you have lights on you, and it's black. You don't see people. And when I first started doing performances with my sister, who had done cabaret and piano bars, I remember saying to her, wait, I have to look at people? I have to actually see people? And that was terrifying to me. And now, if I do a concert, I want the lights up. So in a way, that part wasn't daunting to me. The improv wasn't, part of it was just learning it because it's many, many numbers. And so that I won't be thrown off if, you know, an audience member, you know, does something different or whatever. And so it's a great exercise in brain fitness.
Oh, that's good. What was it about the script that made you want to stay away from home for 6 weeks, that made you want to rehearse in front of stuffed animals, and made you want to do something that was daunting? What grabbed you?
I guess I the message of hope, and that I guess also the timing seems to be good for this play. It's about where everyone deals with depression or ups and downs in life. And it's okay. And it's a chance for me to tell a story of ups and downs of someone's life and a way of coping and collaborating with the audience. I love that part of this play. It's not just me on stage, you know, lecturing about this subject matter. And so it's like this really interesting theater piece. It's very, very funny. It's a serious subject matter done in a very light, interesting, creative way. And I don't know. And I love the danger of it. Maybe not 15 minutes before I go on stage, I'm like, oh no, I have to do it again. But then I really like that. I've always liked when things go wrong on stage and having to fix them in the moment.
What are rehearsals like? What was the prep like?
Once we got here?
Yes.
Once we got here, the first day was January 2nd, and there was like a, normally you do a table read your first day, and this was, well, I've kind of, we're past that. So now I have to do it for people, because I hand out 59 numbers in the half hour before the show, which is actually the hardest part of the show right now, is the pre-show, getting all the cards out, where I made, as a seven-year-old, I started a list of every brilliant thing in the world to give my mom reasons to live and to help me cope with having a mom who was depressed. And the play is about kind of through my life going back to that list. So the audience reads list numbers. So I have to hand out all these, you know. So until I had an audience, and I didn't have a full audience until last Tuesday. And so you'd get like 10, I said, I need people. So you'd bring like 10 people in. And so I got a taste of it. And we had two production people who would like read every other number. But I went, well, I'm not really gonna know what this is like until I have an audience. So it was very much a tight wire act.
Well, this sounds like something that Theater Squared quite hasn't done yet.
You mean this kind of show?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is really unusual. I mean, it's an unusual one-person show, period, because of the... And it's brilliant. I mean, the idea for this...
It is.
It's brilliant.
Beautifully written.
Oh, every brilliant thing. But yeah. It's one of the... It should be one of the brilliant things. But it's really unusual. So, yeah. And we don't do... I think this is only maybe the third one-person show we've done. And then the other unusual thing is that it's in the round, which we have never done. So we've sort of broken stride on that, and it feels great.
There is this improv element. The audience is there with you.
Yes.
How does that work? And how nimble do you have to be?
Well, the main part that the audience does or read these cards. I might say number one, and the person who has number one card yells out ice cream, and it goes up, you know, 826,978. I mean, it's a lot of numbers. But then there are a few people that I will pick out and say, hey, will you be this character in my life? And we do a little, I very gently help people through the scenes. It's usually hilarious because the audience members go rogue and they keep me on my toes. But I don't make anyone do anything they don't want to do. So I make sure everyone is very safe. And if someone doesn't want to do something, it's like totally fine. But I'm I'm surprised and moved by how people, even if they didn't want to take a card to begin with, they're like, oh, I do want one now, or oh, I wish I had done that. And then people are coming back for a second and third time because they want to see it again and they want to bring people they love with them to have this. It's a very unusual experience. It's very hard to describe.
Does your energy level have to be different? Do you have to think about that differently because you're on stage the entire time?
Yes. I remember we were doing a run-through, and I was thinking, I stepped outside myself for a moment. I was like, God, could I just, like, go off stage for, like, 5 minutes? It's like, no, I can't. So it's like going on a train, and once you're on it, you're on it.
But you're also the conductor.
I am.
Or a conductor.
A conductor. But it takes a tremendous amount of stamina and concentration.
Because of the way, because the show kind of begins at what we call half hour, at 7 o'clock, when the doors open and people start going in, because the actor is in there starting to interact and hand out these cards.
I'm personally handing out 59 cards. Hi, will you do me a favor? Can I give you this? If I give you this card, could you read when I call the number? A lot. And people aren't going to their seats at 7 o'clock necessarily. So that's actually the hardest thing, to use all that energy. And then originally I was doing a curtain speech too.
Right.
And then we decided, no, I need to be able to go off stage for 60 seconds before... So I can get a nice rest.
A full 60 seconds, wow.
Yeah, well, Bob's very generous like that. And
hey, I could go on a lot longer.
But that's, you know, and so that's a huge thing, is how do we get these cards out to everyone, and how do we, and casing out people, oh, that person would be, maybe I could ask that person to do this part, or...
I want to ask you about being the voice of an animated character, because that's not a concert, that's not... on stage, you're not in front of a lot of people anyway.
No.
How is that different preparing to seeing that's going to be you, but not quite you?
Well, it requires, when you do, not all movies, but a lot of the animated movie work I did, they would show you a drawing, like a storyboard of a scene, of a song you're going to do. This is what it's going to kind of look like. And you kind of use your imagination. But then you're in a recording booth, and it's like, as someone who was super shy growing up and not wanting to ever sing in front of people, but I would sing in the shower, it's kind of like singing in the shower, only it's like, you know, there's no water. but it takes tremendous concentration, because you have to deliver in your voice so much. And you've got people in the booth, you've got the producer, you've got the writers, and some of them are saying, do it this way. And then it's sort of up to you to create this scene with your voice. And so in that way, and I've always really liked that, I've always loved recording. I always feel safe in a recording studio. But I always thought I was very good at really focusing. And so, again, that is a skill that is serving me well for this piece. It all kind of, it comes back to you. When I did Anastasia, I was doing Meg Ryan's singing voice. And I remember they couldn't have cared less that our voices matched. They just never mentioned it. And the first recording we did, I remember I rented Sleepless in Seattle, and I took my Walkman, and I recorded a scene, and then I like took the train in, and I was listening to her voice on my Walkman. I thought, well, I want to listen to her voice, so I have a, not that I had to really try to match it, but just so I had a sense of who I was singing for. So it's very different. I've been lucky to do so many different kinds of things, and I love them all equally.
What's it like then to see finished product? You're seeing the animated body of your voice.
It's very surreal. The one thing that I think is the oddest thing when I've seen an animated movie, and next time you guys all watch an animated movie, check it out, that they never animate the character breathing. They just, and when I sing, I take big, we have singers who are here right now. It's all about breath support, and you take a big breath before your last note or whatever. In Anastasia, it's like nothing. I'm carrying a dog and twirling in the snow while I'm holding this note. And there's absolutely, you never see a character breathe. They just open their mouths and sing, which always is very strange to me. So I've ruined animated movies now for everyone now.
Bob, let's, before I forget, remind people how they can get tickets and how they can see this show.
Yeah, you can go to our website, theater2.org, and just follow the tickets path. You can call the box office, the Walton Arts Center box office, which is 443-5600. You should know.
That is correct, way. Yes.
And it's running between now and February 10th. Yeah, I don't want to say how many shows a week because I'll freak out our performer here.
Oh, bring it on.
There's
bring
a lot
on.
Of opportunity to see the show. It's selling quite well, so you might want to think about it now. But yeah, another 3 weeks of run.
I'm wondering, you know, we've kind of touched on the fact that a lot of things, if they haven't led to this point in your career, they've certainly helped develop this point. And this is a work about counting, being thankful. Has that had an effect on you?
Yeah. You know what? It makes me, it's doing this play is the ultimate in being in the moment, but it does make me very grateful. I'm so grateful I get to do this play. I started doing something called the 5-Minute Journal about a year ago, because I've never really kept a journal. And it's like, three things you're grateful for in the beginning of the day and at the end. And it's like, we have to stop and take these moments to realize how lucky we are. And there's something that I love at the theater. There's like a big wall with, chalk or something? And people can write what is brilliant to them and what are their brilliant things. And I like to go out there and watch it. Amazing to see what people write, you know, and so it, if people feel at the end of this, boy, I'm grateful for the little things, you know, you don't realize that cup of coffee you have in the morning or that, you know, if there's any, your favorite, you know, NPR person's voice, something that is, you know, a constant in your life or something that you might take for granted. And it's kind of, it's a nice thing. You know, gratitude is something I think is a wonderful thing to cultivate for all of us at every age.
Liz Calloway stars in the one-person play Every Brilliant Thing on stage through February 10th at Nadine Baum Studios and produced by Theater Squared. You can find out more about the show at theater2.org. We heard highlights from a conversation with Liz and with Bob Ford, artistic director at T2, that was recorded in front of an audience Tuesday night at the Fayetteville Public Library.
91.3 FM is supported by the Walmart Museum, offering free guided tours every Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. Tours begin at the Five and Dime shortly before 4:30. No reservations are required. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville, the Walmart Museum is open every day until 9 p.m. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com for more. The 5th Annual Afternoon of Fairy Tales is Saturday, February 2nd from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Bentonville Community Center. This costume-encouraged event includes superhero games, music, crafts, food, and characters from a faraway land. Proceeds provide advocacy services for Restoration Village. RestorationVillage.net for tickets and more information. Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families Soup Sunday event comes early this year. It's January 27th, 4 to 7 p.m. at the John Q. Hammonds Convention Center in Rogers. This family-friendly event includes soup samplings, breads, and desserts donated by over 30 local restaurants and vendors. 927-9800 or aradvocates.org for tickets.
This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Paul Gatling, and this is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. After several years of sharp gains, Northwest Arkansas's regional housing market cooled off just a little bit in 2018. We'll discuss those numbers a little later, but first, let's talk a little smack. Fayetteville-based Field Agent has launched a new division called Field Media. That was made possible with the recent acquisition of Rogers-based social marketing agency, SMAC. The deal was announced earlier this week. Financial terms were not disclosed. Field Agent is a business-to-business data research firm working with retailers and suppliers, seeking insights from a vast number of stores or products sitting on shelves. With the acquisition of SMAC, a company founded in 2015 by Sean Womack, Field Agent's new Field Media business is a business-to-consumer platform that aims to disrupt the traditional in-store product demos with a more targeted approach. Here is Field Agent's always charismatic CEO and co-founder Rick West with his thoughts on the acquisition and how the two companies came together.
We started doing some work together about a year ago, and Field Agent, because of the scale that we have today, was using our panel to help source individuals to become everyday influencers for Sean. And then as that started to gain some speed, the next thing you know, we realized, gosh, with the two of us together working on this, instead of actually funding him separately, why don't we kind of do something together? And it just naturally progressed into an acquisition. And so now you take this everyday influencer piece that Sean was putting together, and it's helped us turn our crowd into an audience. And we've really come full circle to take our work that Field Agent does every day, that, you know, data collection type of work, from audits and research and mystery shopping, and it allows us now really to get into the space of media. And so it's been a pretty exciting journey for us.
Right. And so this will create, I think, a new division that's going to be called Field Media. Is that right?
Right. That's correct. And so we think of Field Media for us. You know, we're going to really start focusing on two or three key areas that most of the retailers and CPG companies have kind of a struggle with. And it's really along the area of shopper marketing and, in particular, activation inside of a store. And so what Field Media will do, it'll allow us to take everyday people, have them engage with products inside of a store, take that home, and then once they engage with that product, really take their thoughts and their opinions and to turn that into an article, and then we're going to post that via social media. So what it allows is that instead of having one or two, you know, large bloggers that are national bloggers talk about an item across the United States, we're going to have tens of thousands of everyday people really engaging with products inside of a retailer, inside of a retail location. And as they engage with that, we're going to give them a voice, and that voice is going to be a publishing voice that allows them to create articles to push out to their friends. And so that's the scale that we've created, tens of thousands of everyday people that now have a voice, and that voice is going to be driven by our Field Media division.
Right, and you're just digging in on that extra level and that extra layer of Field Agents that you've been cultivating through the years. I want to go back to Sean Womack for a minute. I think you're getting about a dozen employees as a result of the deal, including Sean. He's
right.
going to be
right.
heading up the new division. What do you get with him and his expertise and experience?
Yeah, I think there'll be very few people that have not engaged Sean that would say that from a branding marketing standpoint, he's one of the best in the business. I mean, his eye, attention to detail, the creativity that he has is something special. And if you go look at even his post on LinkedIn as he talked about why he sold this, he realized about two or three years ago that I think his analogy was he feels like he's been operating with his left hand, and he's a right-handed person, for the last 3 years as a CEO. And he realized it's just not what he's built to do. He is a brand marketer. He's a creative. And so by bringing him into our organization, it allows me to focus on what I'm good at, an operator driving this business that we have. It brings in some creativity that we'll love to have on our team and really allows us to kind of scale that type of work within our organization that, quite frankly, would be really, really difficult to grow organically.
Right. You can kind of sort of turn him loose again and turn him and his team loose again to do what they've been doing the last 3 years to scale up to this point. So I guess my final question for you, kind of a standard question for me to ask, at least through the first few weeks of any new year, what does 2019 look like for you now at Field Agent? What are you focusing on as you start a new year? What's really impacting your business the most?
you know, we were talking about that literally this morning in one of our team meetings and said, gosh, when you have the kind of growth that we're experiencing just in people alone, I mean, Paul, we'll add almost 30% to our full-time equivalents or FTEs here. And so we look at that kind of growth and what you're doing, the scale. What we're focused on today is to go deeper and broader with the clients that we have, which makes complete sense, right? You want to grow and continue to be focused on that. But also, as we look at new verticals and new clients as we're engaging, the field media piece that's coming alongside us allows us to have a conversation with a large client and say, not only can we help you with your audits and your research, mystery shopping, that customer engagement piece, but now for the first time, field agent can take that same expertise that we have in scale and drive it over here in the media side of things. So when you look at demos and sampling, all the traditional types of things that we're doing, we're literally going to start disrupting that. We're going to be able to do demos unlike anyone's ever done before, the same way for sampling. You know, why mail a sample to a random person when I can send in the core demographic that you're looking for that could sample something right off the shelf? So that's really the focus for us. It's that scaling piece of it. What's been nice for us, to be honest with you, is to be able to work with another company here in Northwest Arkansas, SMAC, and to really bring the two things together to create a really interesting family dynamic. So we've been tremendously blessed to be able to bring on the 11 folks from SMAC, and 2019 is going to be an exciting year for us.
Rick West is the co-founder and CEO of data research firm Field Agent in Fayetteville. You can read more about the company's acquisition of Rogers-based SMAC in a story on our website. Just visit nwabusinessjournal.com. After the break, I'll have the year-end numbers from the regional housing market. So don't go away. You are listening to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Real estate agents combined to sell 9,992 homes in Benton and Washington counties in 2018. That's according to data from the Matrix software platform used by the Northwest Arkansas Board of Realtors. Those figures represent an increase of just 1.3% from home sales in 2017, and that's a notable decline when comparing year-over-year gains dating back to 2014. According to historical data previously reported by the Business Journal, home sales were up 7.7% in 2017, 9% in 2016, and 14.6% in 2015. We have much more on the regional housing market, including comments from Jennifer Welch, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Board of Realtors, in the current issue of the Business Journal. The digital version is now online, and it's free. Just visit nwabusinessjournal.com for more. And that's all the time we have today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report here on Ozarks at Large. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Contributors to this Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large included Zuzana Sitek and Antoinette Grajeda. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. Our big thanks to the staff at the Fayetteville Public Library. for opening their doors once again for our live conversation with Liz Calloway and Bob Ford. If you ever can't make one of those conversations at the Fayetteville Public Library, they also live stream them, and you can find out more information about that at faylib.org. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report comes to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can follow state and regional news at talkbusiness.net. A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Clarksville. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. You can find out more about us and listen to past shows and individual stories and interviews at ozarksatlarge.com. You can also share what you find there with friends and family through links that we provide. All right, we will end this show with music provided by the band Vintage Pistol. By the way, Antoinette Grajeda curates the music we hear at the end of each of our editions of Ozarks at Large when we play music. We're going to hear from Vintage Pistol. They will be playing at Frost Fest Outdoor Beer Festival Saturday, February 2nd in Fayetteville. You can learn more about the band at vintagepistol.com or at their Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. Back tomorrow at noon and 7.
Something that you gotta know.